Hello, everyone, and welcome to Terror Talk.
Welcome to Terror Talk.
I just had a beignet moment. Just one moment.
How do you feel?
I feel good. I feel full. Kathy and I bring each other sweet treats.
We do.
So I got some beignets today.
It's a little Disney nostalgia, even though it's not from Disney.
Right. A little side carriage of beignet with your female revenge psychopaths.
This is always a fun topic.
Today on the show, we are going to talk about some female revenge movies that we like, specifically that have female psychopaths in them, as that is one of the things we talk about really regularly. And last week on the show, you may have enjoyed Kathy's foundation, basically, for this episode of the different reasons why we like it, history about it. And so today we wanted to talk a little bit more about, I'm going to talk about a few of the female revenge psychopaths that I enjoy enacting out my rage by watching. And Kathy's going to mention one or two as well. So here we go. And I'm sure Kathy will have a lot to offer on the films that I talk about.
Maybe. Possibly.
Or
not.
You'll ignore me.
Possibly.
One or the
other. It's anybody's guess.
It's really unpredictable. I have to start with the movie Audition because I've talked about it before. The episodes actually where I talked about it in more detail are not available anymore. So this is going to be new for most people who have listened to us. Unless you listen to us in the days of no audio equipment. Which,
oh, that's true.
You know, unless you listened then, and I really appreciate that you have stuck with us that long through 5 years of us, we commend you and we very much appreciate you. But one of the movies that I love dearly, and love is a strong word because it's hard to love movies that make you cringe and all the things. But there is a movie from 1999 called Audition. And when I saw that movie originally, it was very affecting to me. I had not watched, you know, 400 pieces of horror, 400 million pieces of horror like I feel like I have now at that time. And in 1999, I would imagine, you know, I was working in the TV industry and I was working on a show that was, you know, not horror. So it was Takashi Miike was a new thing to me at that time. And so it affected me quite a bit, but I also found myself drawn to it. I thought it was fascinating, you know, the imagery that he uses and the fantasy and the way he explicates her trauma and the different things that happened to her. And then also the way grief was portrayed as well. So the basic premise is that 7 years after the death of his wife, this company executive, Oyama, is invited to sit in on auditions for an actress. That makes it sound like he didn't create the whole damn thing. What really happens is that his BFF sees that he's depressed because his wife is dead and thinks that a new woman would be the cure for that. And so his friend decides, why don't we audition young women of your type for the job, basically, to be your wife, but we're going to tell them it's for, what, a movie or something like that. So they get all these young, beautiful women to come in and audition under this guise. So it's like, it starts out with the gaslighting. Mm-hmm. It starts out with the lies and the manipulation.
Right out the gate.
I know, right out the gate. And you're sitting there thinking, these guys are awful, but you also feel for him because he has lost his wife and he has a young son. Right out of the gate, you get this feeling of like, I think he's an okay guy, but he's not an okay guy. He's kind of going along with us. And leafing through the resumes in advance, he already catches this young woman's eye. Like, it really takes his attention. Asami, she's striking. She has ballet training. She just sort of looks like the kind of woman that he would like to get to know. And so even before the, this is all this ramp up, it's like 30 minutes of this. And then there's the auditions and they meet and then they go on this, well, journey together. And this movie is unrelenting. It's got a lot of moments where you're like, oh shit. It's definitely something you could cosplay. I mean, if you're her physical type.
You really could.
I think if you're her physical type, you could definitely cosplay Asami and it would be delightful because you would carry around a syringe and things to cut people up with.
Yeah.
That would be delightful. You could wear that little outfit with the long black gloves.
She was like Kill Bill before Kill Bill, like the Asian character.
Yeah.
You know, just like the, just vicious.
For sure. And just truly psychopathic. You can, the way this actress portrays this character is the way I sort of need my female psychopaths to be portrayed. I'm going to talk about another movie that has that in it as well. Is there's this vacancy there and this misunderstanding or not quite understanding the humanity in others while also being manipulative and all the things. And I just think that they do a really good job of that. Now, you know, this movie is almost 2 hours long and you have to understand it definitely has a sensibility that is a slow burn, takes a while with things, has these, and it's also of its time in the 1990s where it has its, like the way we were able to watch imaginal scenes, scenes that were like fantasies or dreams or otherworldly. And we don't, I would say parts of it have aged really well. And I think parts of it haven't aged really well. Mm. So when I watch it now, I have a very different experience than I did in 1999. And that might be partly because I've seen it several times. It might be partly because we have so many different female psychopath movies now. So I'm judging it against them. I still think it's one of the top ones that anybody who's like either just likes that genre and hasn't seen it or is doing any kind of research into this, like it's got to be on your list. So
it's I only watched it because you had shared it with me and it's unforgettable. Especially that last scene.
That's a good word.
You know, it's done so well and it's so visceral, but it's like the audience member is just holding that awful yet like thankful feeling all at the same time.
There's a lot of tension.
It's
built.
So cringy
because it's not like a gore fest or anything.
No, it's not. But it's the mental torment.
Totally.
And then also just some of the physical stuff too is just really visceral. It's done very well
when they get to it. Right. It's
yeah.
Like it doesn't.
Takes a minute.
It doesn't take you on a journey of just like relentless
no.
gore and
which
killing.
Is what I like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's its strength. So you can't go into it thinking, you know, you're gonna just have a bloodbath or something. It's very psychological.
It builds her over time because I think that's the most powerful part of it is you're not seeing her as this vicious killer throughout the movie. It builds up to that.
Yeah. So now if you've listened to this, you know she's a vicious killer. You know it from the posters. You know it from what, you know, it's an old movie. So you're going to know that going in. When I watched it originally, I did not know that. So I really went on that journey of mm-hmm. the movie. So that was very effective. But because it's an older movie, I think its value still lies in just watch how her character reveals itself, I would say, is the most interesting part of this. It's like, you know, you kind of know where it's going. It's, you know, we're talking about it in the female revenge psychopath, so you know that's what's happening. But just kind of go into it just as far as how she reveals herself, how he reveals herself, and just know that culturally, too, there's some differences between our cultures. This is a Japanese movie and, you know, it is a drama in many ways, but it's also a horror.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind. The next movie I wanted to talk about that I would recommend that you watch is a movie from 2013, which was directed by Park Chan-wook, who has Nicole Kidman in it. and it's called Stoker. And Mia Wasikowska is also in it.
Oh, she's really good.
Dermot Mulroney's briefly in it, but he doesn't have a very big part. Matthew Good is actually the other main character.
He's good too.
Yeah, the acting is really solid in this. So what I would say about this is that I would say it's the closest thing that comes to We Need to Talk About Kevin, only the female version.
Okay.
It's not as, I don't find it as horrifyingly twisted as We Need to Talk About Kevin. I don't know what it is about it that's not quite for me. And again, it might be the sensibility that I have now. But the basic premise is that after Mia's character, whose name is India in the movie, after her father dies, her uncle Charlie, who she's really actually never knew existed, comes to live with her and her unstable mother. And the unstable mom is Nicole Kidman. She plays unstable mom pretty well. She's done that role a lot now that I think of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I describe her as an unstable mom, it's like she's always like, you know, the mom that can't quite handle her shit. She comes to suspect, Mia comes to suspect, or India, I guess, comes to suspect that this mysterious, charming man has ulterior motives and becomes increasingly infatuated with him. But what really happens over the course of this movie is that you see India's psychopathic qualities coming to fruition. Mm-hmm. And this uncle is a psychopath. And you kind of know that. It's not really a spoiler if you watch these kind of movies or if you've listened to us for any amount of time. Kind of as soon as he interacts with anyone, you're like, oh, this guy, you know, like he's a suave narcissist. What are we doing here? You know, and you're just figuring because you've read the description of the movie and you're sitting down to watch it that, you know, oh, he's our bad guy. But really kind of the journey you go on is realizing that she's got more psychopathic tendencies. And, you know, next week I'm doing an episode where we're going to talk about why there were so many killers during 1970 and 2000. And it was interesting because I was kind of doing research for both of these episodes at the same time. And one of the things that's really represented in Stoker is this idea of things that, and I'm going to talk about it more in next week's episode, things that we see or we think that young people would be traumatized by, I would say after the age of like 12 or 14, for a psychopath, they're actually getting gratification out of those things. So it's like there's a part in this movie where someone is killed in front of her, and then when she recounts it in the shower, she's masturbating to it. So she's old enough to have passed that point where we know psychopaths are pretty much formed.
Yeah.
What we might think is, oh, you know, when we look at someone's some psychopath's history, we might think, oh, this happened when they were, you know, 12, 13, 14. How traumatic. That must be why they turned around and killed everyone. And she's a great representation of the fact that, no, that was already baked. She's getting exposure to somebody being killed in front of her for the first time. But her reaction to that, and this is would be one of the assessment techniques that anybody, you know, working with this personality would know or would go like, oh, that's a red flag, is that she's excited by it.
Yeah.
Not traumatized.
No. Very excited about it.
She was. She was. And so this movie has a good representation of it. Now, the thing about this movie that I also would say is the acting is good. So you're not getting a bunch of trash. This is Park Chan-wook, who is a South Korean film director. But this is obviously, this is a movie that it has American sensibilities, American actors, etc. This guy directed Old Boy, one of my very favorite older kind of crazy ass male psychopath bonkers movie. He directed Thirst, of favorite vampire of mine, vampire movie of mine. I love his directorial style. So what I could tell you also is this movie is beautifully shot. There's a lot of beautiful shots in it. There's a lot of ways we sort of get to know characters by the way he shoots them. Mm-hmm. The it's just the note of a good director. And so he's done a few of my kind of favorite South Korean films. And so it's probably another reason why I enjoy this movie is just because the storytelling and the way it's shot and the acting is so good. And that, to me, that means the directing is really good.
Sure.
So I would say that's an awesome one to watch. And definitely in the realm of this particular genre. And I guess when we group things into genres together, I'm always so surprised at all of the themes that come up for both of us, you know? It's like some very foundational horror movies when I really wasn't like observing myself as a horrorphile that much, whereas now we're like always analyzing what we like and what we don't like and all of that. I wasn't doing that at the time. So when I look back at different movies, when I try to pull these nuggets out to kind of make an episode about a particular theme, I'm always surprised, like, oh, I really do like several of these, you know, kind of female revenge psychopaths movies.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And another one that I would bring to the forefront as one of the ones I wanted to specifically talk about today, and I don't know if you've ever seen this one, but it's called Battle Royale, and it's a 2000...
I have not.
A year 2000 Japanese movie as well. And again, this is from 2000, so it's almost 25 years ago, and it has a sensibility that I don't think has aged as well as I would have liked, but I rewatched it recently in order to talk about it today. And I still really think this movie is very serious and horrible things happen, but it's more fun to watch, I guess. And that's because there's a lot of action in it. The basic premise is that in the future, the Japanese government decides to capture a class of ninth graders and forces them to kill each other under the Revolutionary Battle Royale Act. So there's like some political government act that I don't need to explain why it happens. Just watch the movie, because this movie's like more than 2 hours long. So honestly, it doesn't always feel like that because there is a lot of action, because basically from the get-go, there's these ninth graders in this room and they've been captured and this is being explained to them. And during the explanation, the guy kills a couple of them. So you, out of the gate, you're like, oh.
Kills a couple of the kids?
Yes. Battle Royale is ninth graders forcing them to kill each other.
Oh. See,
is
this Japanese?
Yes.
They are so ahead of like what we do now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this type of horror is now something that we see a lot of, this like, you know, pinning people up against each other and do it. This has been at the center of their genre for such a long time. And I think it's why it's so controversial. Absolutely. And why it's so triggering, because even in the absence of horror, the psychological terror, mm-hmm. and then using children.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Ninth graders.
This is like, you know, Hunger Games times, I mean, this is not even like that's a nice little children's book compared to what
it really is.
The Japanese do with this type of horror. It's really fucking brilliant.
Yeah, this is, and I would say this is a cornerstone of that. Like, they've come out with a couple of series recently that are this basic premise, right? It's a game. You go out into the world, you try to survive the game, right?
Wasn't Squid Game kind of like that too?
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
they're
okay,
doing
yeah.
a bunch of those yeah. kinds of things now.
I never watched that.
But this, neither did I, because I have Battle Royale and
yeah.
I know what that is. I'm sure it's great. A lot of people said it was good, but I, you know, I've been there and I've done that, so I didn't like jump on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if one of you guys tells me that it's amazing and I have to watch it because it's got a new twist to it, then I'll give it a shot. But yeah, this is a room full of ninth graders in the beginning of this movie, and you're kind of getting to know the different characters. Like, they've already set up little subplots between them and stuff, and then you get them in this room, and then a couple of them are like dead, stabbed to death or shot or whatever. Because, you know, if you mouth off, he just goes, oh, okay, you know, he just kills you. And then the ones that are left, you know, their friends are lying dead on the floor and they're getting their orders. They're clutching their packs, you know, like, what the fuck is this?
Did you say these are like high school kids or younger?
Ninth graders. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And they look really young. And they give him a pack and they send him out into the world to survive. And within, you know, they start killing each other off, because the only way you get to go home is if everyone else is dead and you're not. So it's basically battle of the fittest or whatever.
Wow. Brutal.
Yep. There's a count going on. Girl number 8, and then the name. Like, every time there's a girl that dies and every time there's a boy that dies, they put on the screen, like, boy number 13, girl number 8, and their name. Meanwhile, there's whole, like, relational subplots going on with them. And then about halfway through or so, or, you know, when it starts to rise to a conclusion, there's all this shit that goes down. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff.
I can only imagine, like, the climax of this movie.
Yeah. And then, the like harrowing end, right? Now, why is it in this episode? Because there are a couple of these kids, and a few in particular, that are female psychopaths that are been put into this game. And you can argue, like, were they always like that? Were they not? You know, is it because of the game? You know, and then, of course, we know that, no, this is just, they were given the opportunity to enact it for survival. And so there we go. Like, but I would recommend the movie in general. It's not a sensibility that's right now. There's more, you know, in some ways maybe it is, you know, lots of people are into reading romanticy, where it's like romance and fantasy stories. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's an element of that, because it does have, like I said, it's way over 2 hours long. So it does have these subplots of this like teen angst, or teens having relationships with other, but it's not like necessarily romantic. I mean, either they're crushes or people that say they're in love with each other, all this kind of thing. But so there's that going on, and I guess in that way it could be seen as contemporary, but really the way it's shot and everything, you definitely, it's the year 2000, so.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I really want to watch Battle Royale now.
I think you should. I think it's worth it. Like, throw it on. Like I said, it's pretty long. So there's this character. Her name is Mitsuko Somo.
Maybe it's a good one for the Peloton.
Mitsuko will be your friend and psychopath for the morning.
I love
it. When you watch this movie.
I love it.
It's pretty twisted. And, you know, she's a good representation of using your sex appeal to seduce and then slay in a brutal fashion. So that's a trope and also a reality that we see in the world, but then also in movies shown a lot, is this women using their sex appeal to get you closer to them so that they could kill you, which, you know, gets her pretty far in the game, obviously. And she also seems to enjoy taunting her fellow female students and also eviscerating the male anatomy.
Oh, okay.
So she's bully times 4,000. And she's our little female psychopath in this particular movie.
Amazing.
She is amazing.
She's everything we want in a female revenge.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, right?
Yeah, she's just like, wait, you're giving me permission to,
well, this connects with
everyone?
What we were talking about in part one of this series, which is, gives us this fantasy of things we could never do without consequence or without, like, ever feeling bad about it. It's just like, you know,
for sure.
Yeah, just do that. That sounds good. Yeah. Cut off his penis.
Like, wait, you're going to give me weapons?
Yeah.
And send me out into the woods to kill all the other people? Like, on purpose?
Yeah.
For real? Like, free? Let me go do that and enjoy myself.
That's right. Without consequence.
All right, so the fourth one we were going to just talk about today, because, of course, there's a million of these types of movies right now. I would say a million, but there are a lot of a lot of them, but we wanted to talk about a few good ones, and that's Promising Young Women.
So there's one, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about really quickly that like its predecessor.
You bet.
I mean, it wasn't that that's actually probably not the best way to describe it, but in my mind, it is a predecessor to this film because it's one of, I don't know, I think one of the oldest, at least like within our time. Sure. So it's a movie called Ms. 45 that came out in 1981.
It's a great
and
one.
It's a really fun one. This is, so one of the guys on our Discord, who's a patron snake, he and I, his name's not the patron snake. It's just, yeah, he is a patron and he's part of our Discord and he's awesome. And he does a lot of really fun stuff. If you join our Discord, he does a lot of fun nights. But anyway, there was a night that he and I watched this one together. That's where we became obsessed with the saxophone guy. Because at the end, the music is
a great flick.
It's a lot of saxophone, guys. but this movie, I think, gives revenge fantasy as far as within our generation. Like, you know, we can really look at this as one of the first. It was inspired by films of the 70s like Taxi Driver and Death Wish and things like that. So Thana, a mute woman who becomes a spree killer after she is raped twice in one day when going home from work. She essentially starts to become this killer. And this movie has a lot of, like, I know I say this when I talk about the 70s and 80s, but there is like a giallo type feel to this movie, the way that it's shot. It almost looks like a documentary. So like cinematically, it's awesome.
It does.
And then you kind of feel like you're a first person shooter, like watching this, because you are her going through this whole thing. And her character's so badass, and the different like costumes and roles that she takes. I think she dresses as a nun at one point and goes in and like kills somebody.
She's
but if you really want to watch like an action packed classic revenge film from late 70s, early 80s, I highly, highly, highly recommend this film. So just wanted to give credit to where credit's due, because I think movies like Promising Young Woman all definitely are influenced by movies like Ms. 45. But
absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, Promising Young Woman, my God. First of all, produced by Margot Robbie. Carey Mulligan is so fantastic in this movie.
Amazing.
But this is one of my favorite revenge fantasies in the last 5 years.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah. And this was at Sundance, and it took Sundance by storm. It was like the hottest ticket to get.
Mm-hmm.
It was really popular. It's a young woman played by Carey Mulligan. She's just such a fantastic actress.
She's so incredibly diverse.
Yeah, and it's just a great body of work. But a young woman haunted by a tragedy in her past takes revenge on the predatory men unlucky enough to cross her path. And that is basically the simple through line. That is what is happening. But I will tell you, it's well shot, well directed. She's funny. She's charming. You like her. You get on her side. And there's also some twists and turns. You don't exactly see everything coming. But what you do see coming, you're just excited for it to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's I really enjoy this one. Is actually quite a bit of, it's got heart as well, but it's quite a bit of fun to watch.
It's very fun. And I mean, even just straight out of the opening scene, right out the gate, the first scene, you're just like, oh, this is going to be a wild ride.
Yeah. You just know, you just go, oh, okay. Yeah. It was immediately a likable film. I think it won awards at Sundance too. It was just so solid that, I mean, I gave it 4 out of 5 stars, and 4 out of 5 stars for me is the highest you can really get without being something I've watched 15 times from the 1990s,
like Horror Facts with Cat
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Horror Facts with Cat.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You paused and looked away.
There's a movie called Horror Facts with Cat I'm unaware of.
There will
How
be.
How did you make this movie without me?
There. Well, you come in the end, you have to guess everything.
I'm the stupid half of the Horror Facts with Kath.
Can we talk about how great of a job Adam Brody does at playing such a fucking douchebag and pretty much everything he does?
He really does.
He's such a dick.
He's so good at it, though.
He's so good at it. He's probably like the nicest guy in person, but he plays these roles so fucking well that I'm like, Adam Brody, I don't like you because you do this too well.
Which movie would you be talking about for the people?
God. Well, Promising Young Woman, that opening scene.
Yeah.
you're just like, you're such a dick. And so, you know, right after that opening scene, you just want to give her like a standing ovation.
I know.
Like,
she's so amazing. Good. She's just amazing in this movie. And the character is just really, I think it's one of those ones that anyone who's ever been victimized in a big way, in a micro way, in a macro way, whatever it is, we've all been aggressed against. Just depends on the level of aggression and how it affected you and who you are. But I think anyone who's ever felt that way, ever felt victimized relationally or, like I said, in a criminal manner, the first few scenes of this movie will allow you to go, okay, I'm getting my popcorn and I'm going to live out my fantasy of getting back at those people.
For real.
So this is a good one for that. Well, I think that's a pretty good list for now.
Yeah, that's a good start. I mean, honestly, though, for those of you listening today, anybody who hasn't watched any of the Japanese or Korean horror, some of the ones that Shannon was recommending, really, if you give those a chance, if you've never done those, they're quite horrifying. And yeah. I think you provided some unique ones that a lot of people probably haven't seen. Yeah, Audition, I know people have seen, but it's a good place to start.
Absolutely. Yeah. These are definitely, I think all four of these movies are basic in this genre. And there's several more we could talk about, but that's all we have for you today. We thank you so much for listening. This has been an episode of Terror Talk. My name is Shannon.
And I'm Kathy. Please stay, sleep safe, everyone.